Like, John doesn't do any of the editing anyway. It's toast.
The Scarab Swarmcast is recorded, mixed, and produced at Lord Wellington's Beef Trapeze in Columbia, South Carolina. Mostly. Scarab is the South Carolina area role players and board gamers convention held annually in Columbia, South Carolina on MLK weekend for 4 days. The Scarab Swarmcast podcast is hosted by and features many of the Scarab staff and guests. Viewers and opinions expressed on this show usually come from a random D20 chart or an FAQ found on the web somewhere, and usually don't reflect anything any sane person would or should think. Ah, I'm Toast, your kobold announcer. And now, here's your host, John Middles!
Deep beneath the turbulent bustle of Lord Wellington's Beef Trapeze, secreted away in the cozy but not too confining crawl space, there lived and worked an orange kobold named Toast. His abode smelled of chicken and atrociously good Wi-Fi. Toast was busy attempting to edit mindless ramblings recorded in an attempt to create yet another in the line of episodes of something called The Swarmcast. As he toiled, banged, and snipped away, he turns to us and says, "Some people prefer unedited shows, while others, such as I, do not."
Oh, hi, Frank. I didn't hear you come in.
And so it was that on this day, on whatever it was recorded on, Toast was editing what has to become known in your culture, the equivalent to the mud shark in your mythology.
What are you talking about? I was just gonna edit this thing, John, don't you? That he recorded like a month or so ago. Let's see what I got so far. A mud shark? Really? Who gets that reference anymore?
Hello, if you're listening. If you're not listening, then,
then interpretive dance.
There you go. You're listening to the Scarab Swarmcast. I'm John Manus, and I have a few people here at the table with me. To my left is...
Kristen.
Followed by Clayton. And...
And Jason.
Some of these voices you may remember, they've been on all sorts of shows together. Well, actually, I don't know if they've all been together in the same room at the same time.
Not for this, I don't think.
Okay. I'm sure we've been in some sort of rooms at the same time.
Firefly's gaming floor is pretty big.
That's true. So, they've all been on the same plane of existence together. But anyway, so you mentioned Firefly. So, originally the topic for this was going to be...
Speaking of Firefly.
So, our original topic was going to be, how did we enjoy the game day, or free RPG day that was last Saturday, the 20th of June, at Firefly and Toys and Games? Then I realized that Kristen was only there for really one game out of the two game sessions. Yeah. Jason was kind of there for one and a half, I guess.
Well, it's kind of funny when, you know, two people sit down to a table that it's supposed to be for a four-person game, and the guy running it wants to run the game so badly that he doesn't cancel, and you're sort of stuck there like, I wanted to play something else if this wasn't going to fill up.
Well, to Steve's credit, kudos to him for sticking to it and still running that game anyway.
And I do want to say that the system was very interesting, it was a good game, and that it's definitely something I'd be interested in seeing again at some point, just ideally with a full table.
And that was, what, Through the Breach, which is the RPG based off of Malifaux. I got it right. By Weird Games, or Weird, I don't know.
Weird,
I think weird way of spelling.
I've seen people, primarily it seems like people overseas, but that are excessively, slavishly devoted to Malifaux. I didn't really know what it was until I saw some of their Facebook postings and showing their painted minis and...
Well, all the miniatures look really neat for that game, and it's like, I would buy these miniatures for Deadlands.
Yes.
Because it's very much a Deadlands kind of feel and vibe. A little bit more cyber-techy kind of stuff in it, but...
very much a sort of Weird West game, which seems to be a blossoming genre, with the Sixth Gun Kickstarter, I think, is entering the final days or hours.
Again, another Weird West type of thing. It's not Malifaux, but it's closer to Malifaux than Deadlands, I would think.
I'm not really sure. I haven't read that
comic. I'm making that. Yeah, I'm just making that up.
For all y'all out there at Radio Land, Kristen and I both looked at each other, and I did the peanut.
They were sitting there, their eyes were glossing over, and I said Deadlands, and they went, what? No, but seriously, it's in Malifaux, I mean, you think Calvin likes the Pathfinder goblins. He would go crazy over the Malifaux goblins, because they are a little... They're it's going to sound so wrong. They're little redneck bayou goblins.
Wait a second.
They're from Killian, I'm pretty sure.
I've been up against a couple of redneck half-orcs.
I was going to say, kind of like Pathfinder ogres. Draw backwards.
Surprises!
For some reason.
Hey, let's not stereotype people.
That's right. Let's not use the backwaters we're going to show. We call
ogres
them
are humanoids, too.
We call them surprises. Okay, so you had fun with your brief encounter with Through the Breach.
Yes, I did.
Through the Breach.
Cool. It had a card based mechanic.
Okay.
Where every character had a specific deck of cards they could use. There was a common fate deck, so when you were trying to do something, you drew a card, and if it wasn't good enough, you could try to trump it with a card from your hand.
And were these, like, special cards, or were they,
he was just using regular playing cards.
Okay.
There is apparently a special deck you can purchase.
So, I mean, of course.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't there be?
But I thought it was kind of neat, so that...
I like money.
I thought it was neat in that your character, when you absolutely wanted to, you could pretty much guarantee success, but you could only do that so much.
Okay. Well, that's kind of cool. So it's
not only guarantee so much success.
So you've got that random element, but a chance to go, no, I really want this. And
Yeah, they even referred to it as cheating fate. So
I think it'd be interesting to actually get a chance to play this game out, just to see what it's like to play a game that not only requires the book and the character sheets and dice.
No dice.
Okay. But yet 5 or 6 decks of cards.
I think there was only one deck of cards.
So each person didn't get their own deck?
No. Well, each person got basically a hand of 3 cards. I think I had a perk on my character sheet that gave me 4.
Are these playing cards, or are these cards
playing
specifically
cards.
With... Okay.
These are playing cards.
Huh, interesting.
That's sorry, I'd be saying gin and...
But, well, I mean, when you consider even how much a set of regular polyhedral die are, bicycle pack... Cards are way cheaper.
I can put all my dice into one little bag that fits in the bottom of my book bag, fine. But to put 7 or 8 decks of cards and keep them from getting squashed or corners bent and stuff like that, I mean, it's hard enough right now just to keep one deck of cards to, you know, from getting messed up just for running Savage Worlds. Or Deadlands and whatnot.
It doesn't sound like you need that many.
I have like 5 or 6 decks of cards.
I have like 10 or 12 because I do collect them, but the ones that I collect don't get played with.
I understand.
I take a trip to somewhere.
My cool clear cards that have, like, you know, classic Universal Monsters on them or something.
So these are non-playing cards.
I'm waiting to get a set of those.
So these are non-playing cards?
No, they're playing cards. The cheap. Dollar
playing cards that you don't play with. Interesting.
The other game that I played, we will discuss later, I'm sure, and that was a little game called Knights Black Agents.
That's right. We will definitely talk about that a lot more. Let me say this about Knights Black Agents. It's based on a system by Robin Laws, written by Kenneth Haidt.
I was clearing my throat randomly.
Because you were trying to make sure I didn't leave Kenneth Haidt.
Yeah,
those are two guys who definitely need all the attention they can get. Support them. Now, they have a really cool show. Ken and Robin talk about stuff. Where mostly Robin talks about Gumshoe and Hill Folk.
And Kenneth Haidt
talks about everything. Talks
random
about everything
historical
in history.
Things, lots of Nazis, occultism.
Yeah, occult Nazis. You name it.
I think he wrote a book on occult Nazis.
That one's,
he did.
He wrote the book on occult
The book. The definitive Occult Nazis by Kenneth.
The definitive not crazy book on occult Nazis.
Oh, yeah.
For Osprey, of all people, from what I can recall listening to the podcast, who make apparently very detailed books about militaria. Or militaria? What's that word? Just basic military history, we'll say.
There you go. That works. Military hysteria. Hysteria. There we go. Speaking of hysteria.
Sounds like a Def Leppard song.
Yeah, there you go. Military hysteria. That's the follow-up to their 1980-something... or was that 90s? Did hysteria come out in the early 90s?
91 or 92, I think.
I thought it was before that.
If only we had some way to research this at our fingertips.
Blah, there's no researching here. I mean, I got the disc in the other room. I'm sure I could go look it up, but I'm There's no research in podcasting. You must mistake us for some other podcast where they prepare for stuff. So, Clay, did you do anything interesting at Free RPG Game Day?
Well, I came in, I sat down, and I got my son into a Pathfinder game. He got to play Weeby Goblins Free, proceeded not to talk about it. So I don't even know. I guess he had fun. My wife got into a game. Not sure which one she got into.
I know which game she got into.
That's right. I do know your game.
It was my Cobalt Saint, my baby game. The free RPG Day one.
So she was in that, and I spent the entire time talking.
So cool. You got to hang out and talk with people.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Kristen? I understand that you were there for the entire...
I showed up for the 6 o'clock game because I spent my morning out in the 100-degree heat helping someone move.
Thanks, Thomas.
Yeah, I'm going to shout out to someone who isn't going to listen to this because he's too busy being law school-y, going to law school. Yeah.
We all shake our disapproving heads. Nothing good comes from a gamer who goes to law school.
Let's go on ahead and stop the podcast right there, because otherwise we're going to get...
We'll move on. I was running the quick start for Cobalt Ate My Baby, which Mary got to play in. Mm-hmm. It was interesting, very very abbreviated version of that game.
Did you end up with 9-year-olds at the table?
I did not.
Okay.
No, my son did not play.
And I had, like, 11 deaths.
We had...
Balin played, and I think he's probably the youngest one there, but he was not 9 years old.
We had two of those when we were... the only time I've ever played that game. And it kind of kept the tone from reaching the correct place.
Well, what we'll have to do is I'll have to break out the quick start at some point and invite a bunch of guys over. You guys included.
And have actual beer and pretzels.
Right, and then we'll run through that, and then we'll record a kick in the quick for that.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Well, your experience was jaded with 9-year-olds. My experience was enhanced by the fact that two of the players that played the first time.
Okay.
The first time I played Cobalt Ate My Baby was at Gen Con. No, it wasn't. That was the second time I played. But
yeah, when I was running at Gen Con,
I actually signed up to to play in the game that he ran at Gen Con in some remote little half office room, miniature ballroom that had like a table and a half. Now we sat down, and two of the people at the table were at least 3 sheets to the wind. One of them was 9 sheets to the wind, so much so that he almost passed out.
Yeah.
Which was really funny, because the guy that was only half drunk was the one that kept saying "All hail King Torg" and really messing up his friend. His friend kept taking horrible death checks over and over and over again. A certain explicative was said on more than a couple of occasions.
That reminds me, do you still have his dice?
I do still have his...
His metal dice?
Metal...
That he left at the table?
Steel D6s.
Metal dice.
Every year.
Metal dice!
D6!
They're heavy metal dice.
Like tungsten or something?
Don't know what
they're made out of. Solid gold.
Sure, they have a liquid nitrogen core. I don't know. For some reason,
perpetually.
That's so when you throw it in the cup with the salt water, it can bounces out and stuff like that. All right, so here at the table, since I brought it up, has seen that balance your dice video.
I saw the thumbnail for it and passed right on by it because I had no interest.
I admit I didn't watch it the first 5 times people shared it with me. But eventually I broke down and it's like, wow, I care. Like, very little about this. So you fill a cup with salt water, and you drop your dye in it, and it's supposed to float, and that kind of tells you where the imperfection or air bubble in your dye is, and that's going to give you greater insight as to why, no matter which dye you pick up, you always seem to be rolling ones.
I thought about...
And then I think you're supposed to drink the full glass of salt water after
including
that.
The dye, yeah.
Yeah.
And the more I went, this seems to be an advertisement for clear dice. Like some clear dice manufacturer.
I thought it was like an ad for like Dasani salt water or something.
The only thing I thought of when I saw that was, alright, so how many people are going to go digging for their 2011s?
So if someone wants to send in a video or a picture of balancing
a 2011 scarab,
2011 scarab die in a vat of salt water. Send that to
Richard Swarmcast. Moore, you are automatically disqualified.
Yes, send your pictures or video. Better yet, share it on Swarmcast site or Scarab site or wherever. I really don't care. It'll be cool to see. And why not? We might pick someone who might win a prize. Sure. So, speaking of which...
Did anybody win any of the prizes that
on our Conquer Alliance podcast, we announced, I don't know, half a dozen or so different contests. All of them exciting and such. And so far, nobody has brought Clay a drink.
I did. I totally did.
Oh, you did, didn't you? Just now?
Right there.
Look at that.
It's in my hands
right now. So you were in the running. You could possibly win whatever the amazing...
Fabulous prize
is going to be. In fact, here's what it is right here. Let me pull it up here. Do you see it? Isn't that cool? Huh. It's the most amazing thing ever, right?
I'm disappointed.
And it could be yours.
So still nothing on any of the other contests, though, right?
No. I'm falling away with all the other gobs of... mail and stuff that I'm getting on a daily basis also.
I saw the piles when I came in. It's hard getting through that door, man.
It's true. It is.
That's why we use the side door.
So send any comments to swarmcast@scarab.com. That's /c-a-r-a-b.com.
I think you should have a contest for a way of saying that faster.
That would be an awesome contest.
Or jingly.
In fact, we will have that contest, so if you come up with a cool way...
Recorded!
A cool recorded way of saying s-c-a-r-a-b.com, send it to Swarmcast at s-c-a-r-a-b.com.
And we may use you in the next podcast.
Yeah.
And it's got to be objectively cool. None of that subjectively cool crap.
Yeah, none of this Nyan Cat flying over a moon kind of cool.
No, it's got to be about 20% cooler than that.
Yep.
The standard cool units.
Double Nyan Cat.
Not using English units.
Great Googly Moogly.
You can say that again. What was that?
Suddenly, and without warning or hesitation, a game maker who is strictly commercial, started whipping on our favorite little kobold with an unedited game review.
Game review.
That's right, he hit him upside the head with an unedited review here at WAP, right upside the nose and face. And that got Toast just about as evil as a kobold could be. And then with a vigorous circular motion, Toast proceeded to clip it down and edit it to reasonable size. Yet edited the review. That's right, folks, here we are.
Super Dungeon Explorer. The Forgotten King, published by Ninja Division and Soda Pop Miniatures. It's for ages 14 and up, 2 to 6 players, plays in about 30 minutes to 2 and a half hours.
Bring the video game console to your tabletop with Super Dungeon Explorer. Build a party of brave heroes to battle through classic hack-and-slash dungeons and defeat the villainous dungeon boss. Beautifully, fully assembled, 16-bit inspired miniatures bring the game to life over lavishly illustrated dungeon tiles featuring the unique locations of Crystallia. Two complete game modes, Classic and Arcade, allow you to play either cooperatively as the heroes against an automated dungeon or adventurously with a game master controlling the monsters.
With this game review, you've got myself, John, and my wife, Ruby.
Hi, nice to meet you.
And this is a game that, in particular, we were very excited to get because this was a Kickstarter game that came out. The Kickstarter started in March of 2014, and we have just recently, as of, I want to say, middle of July, finally got everything from our Kickstarter. I want to say Wave 1 came out, and then it came out around June?
No, it was May.
It was May?
We sat it on the shelf till most of our stuff was showing up.
So that came out in May, and then Wave 2 just finally finished. Because
remember, Wave 1 was part of Chinese New Year,
That's right. It got, so there were some delays with it coming out. Some of it had to do with Chinese New Year, some of it had to do with customs.
Yeah.
But it's here. Finally have it, and this game is exciting because this is actually sort of an expansion and reboot of the original version of Super Dungeon Explorer.
Which we got quite a couple years back, and we mostly got it because it looked really neat and cutesy and kind of anime-ish, and it had really neat miniatures and lots of them, and I like painting miniatures, so I really wanted the game. Initially, the game was about $90, and then each of the expansion packs that you could purchase were between $25 and $30. At that point, it was a fun game. We'd invested quite a bit of money into it because it had 4 expansions.
Right.
And what the expansions included were usually about 10 or 15 miniatures, a handful of cards, and some additional little tidbits that you could do to add into your game.
Right. And because this is an expansion, and like I said, it's more like just a full reboot. They've redesigned all of the rules. They've got
new artwork.
Yeah. Instead of just the one style of gameplay, the box says there's two, but there's really a third one. Because there's the
PvP.
Which
you can go to their website in their download section, and you can download all the rules for free to do it PvP if you wish. So basically you choose a hero and someone else chooses a hero and a spawn point. Thrust your monsters and heroes at each other.
Yeah. So the basic gist of what this game is like is if you've ever played HeroQuest or what was that one game?
Descent.
If you've ever played Descent, now I know a lot of people get turned off from Descent because it tends to take a lot of time to put together and a lot of time to play. This does not take nearly as long to put together as the original version of Descent.
The boards are actually tiles, square tiles. So you basically choose one tile per hero being played and you put down the tiles there. So if there's 4 heroes, you're playing on 4 tile boards. So depending on the number of players determines how big the board is.
Right. And so bringing up the board and all of that, where there's a lot of plastic, a lot of minis that get placed on this, a lot of cardboard. So what do we think of the quality of all these components? Because there's cards, there's the boards, there's the miniatures, there's the dice. Even the dice are
a component to this, too. Chits for...
That's right, little punch board chits and stuff for the different status effects and rune tokens and such.
I like the quality of the plastic. It is the kind of plastic that's not super hard. It's a little flexible, so if you squash it in your box, it won't snap, but your spears might bend a little and never be truly straight. The cardboard is a really nice, heavy, waxy cardboard, so if you accidentally spill some water on it, it's not going to damage it too bad unless you let it soak in. The cards are nice wax kind of cards, so they shuffle well. We sleeved all of our cards just because we anticipate a lot of play and strangers playing it, and I don't want their grubby mitts on the actual cards, because you don't know where people put their hands.
Right, and I recommend sleeving it as well. That works out very nicely.
One of the additional products that they came out with Forgotten Kings, is they came out with plastic wound and potion token, not just the cardboard chip ones. So you still get your normal cardboard chip ones, but you can purchase the plastic ones separately.
Right. And that's an important thing to remember about this Kickstarter. With the Kickstarter, we went all out and got pretty much everything.
We did. Because we knew we were going to buy it all eventually, right. So it was a huge discount in price for us. That was really there's only 2, maybe 3 other things that were exclusive for the Kickstarter. One was a metal princess coin, and that's if they basically used, I think, $1 million or something like that.
Right.
And it was a really high kick. It was a really high add-on. That is the only true thing that was Kickstarter exclusive.
Yeah, and that one's more for just prestige and show. It doesn't have a game effect or anything like that. It's not going to... We're not going to get a distinct advantage over anybody else who's bought the game from the retailer.
It's not a necessity to play the game.
Right.
It's just something kind of cool and extra.
And all the extra boards and even extra dice and those little tokens you talked about, those can all be purchased
separately. All of the miniatures as well can all be purchased separately.
There was a coloring book, which...
There was a coloring book, but I think they're going to offer that on their site. They don't have all of the stuff up because they were more about getting it out currently, and I think they're slowly adding it as they're getting it out to distributors and retailers.
Yeah, and it's just a cutesy little coloring book. It doesn't give you bonuses to any dice rolls or anything like that. It's got a lot of their really awesome art, and it's got some puzzles and things like that in it.
The other item that may or may not be a Kickstarter exclusive, which I'm not sure, is they have something called the Boo Booty Box.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just an art box that is the same shape as the Super Dungeon Explorer Forgotten Kings box for all of your extras, your miniatures, your boards, your things like that.
Which is coming pretty handy.
Yeah.
With all the amount of plastic that you're going to get in this.
Our particular game, because we had the original game, we had all of the expansions for the original game. We have now Forgotten Kings and...
Oh, gosh.
And we have we have everything for Forgotten King. We have, like, three different expansions and bonus heroes and bonus bosses.
Bonus bosses, yeah.
So we have a lot of plastic. When it was set to ship, it said it was going to be 20 pounds between cardboard and plastic. Then that's not including our original stuff. Anyway, so we have the Super Dungeon Explorer Forgotten Kings box. We have the Boo Booty box. And I have a very large tackle box that's full of miniatures.
Yeah, all the originals and all the new ones and expanded ones. Now, one thing to note is, because we were talking about all the originals from the original set, you could still use all of that with this reboot.
Except the boards and the old cards.
Right, except the boards and the old cards.
Because they updated the boards, and they also updated all of how the game plays, so the cards for the old miniatures don't work. But what they did is they put out like a $15 pack that is a conversion pack, and it has all the cards for all of the original monsters and bosses and the one-shots that they put out, like Calico Kate and all of them.
Right.
So if you have those, you spend $15 and you can use all of your original miniatures.
Right. So all those Princess Rubies that we got from all the demos and stuff.
Yeah. And also, the dice stayed the same. So if you have the dice from the old game, you can still use...
Right. So we've effectively got two full sets of dice, which we found works perfectly fine for the two of us. However, you can still get extra dice.
Right.
I think they've got a card game they're putting out now that has a full set of dice in it, too.
Yeah.
Honestly, like I said, for the two of us, I'd even say if there were four of us playing, the amount of dice we have is more than enough.
Yeah.
I think if I went above that, if I tried to do the six-player one, I might want an extra set of dice just because I'm a dice hog.
I was going to say, I will note that if you decide to try and do a six-player game, it will probably take more than the 2.5 hours because John and I, we've actually done like 4 or 5 of the arcade modes now where basically we play against the board. We've won one. It's pretty tough.
It's fun, but it's very tough.
I forgot where I was going with this. We were talking about arcade mode. Oh, well, what are some
distinctive pros of this game?
Well, if you like that classic 8-bit and 16-bit feel, it does have that. They incorporate it well into the cards. They incorporate well into the art. The super deformed look of the miniatures. It's a very nice, sturdy game. Its rules are fairly easy.
Yes.
There is a bit of a curve to learning it, because it seems like a lot of stuff at first. Because, as they say, the classic mode rulebook is 32 pages. The arcade mode rulebook is 40 pages. So there's a lot of stuff, but once you start getting into the game, the first game you play is going to be kind of slow. Second game, ours picked up and we cut it in half. The rules are easy, but there's a little bit of a learning.
Yeah, and I'd say that's just like with any of those dungeon crawl kind of games like Descent.
Oh, I was going to say, if you pick up Arkham Horror, that's another
game. Yeah, if you're good at Arkham Horror, this should be cakewalk. Well, that's kind of the pros and, I guess, the cons. Kind of all rolled into one.
I don't know, some of the cons. Oh, one of the things about the miniatures. Each expansion is their own set of colors. All the heroes are done in gray. The Mistborn stuff is all in green. All the Forgotten King stuff is in green.
Yes.
The Von Drak stuff is all in purple.
It's in purple. Yeah.
So once you prime it, though, unless you have the cards or you know, you don't know which set it came from.
Right.
So one of the things that I'm doing personally to kind of distinguish it is I'm painting each of their bases the color that the plastic was.
Now that being said, because I know a lot of board game players are probably like, wait, painting? What?
No, you don't have to paint.
You don't have to paint them.
You don't. And I just like painting.
And all the miniatures are already assembled.
Yes. The original game, the first couple of printings of it, they were not assembled. And then a lot of people complained about that. And so then when they started reprinting the original game, they started assembling them. And Forgotten King is all assembled.
And it's a pretty good job of assembling, too. I haven't had any complaints about the miniatures so far.
No, me either. They prime really well if you're interested in painting them.
And from an RPG standpoint, the miniatures are perfectly scaled for, hex or grid-based RPG games if you really decide that, hey, I like the way this miniature looks. That's the way my character for D&D is going to look or something.
Yeah, that's very true. There's a lot of different options that you can play. So you can play this game a lot, many, many, many times over and over and over again. And the game will be different because depending on the monsters you choose, depending on the heroes you choose, it's a different combination every time. In the Forgotten King base game box, there are there's five new heroes.
And that's just
the base game. Yeah. And in each of their expansions, they add at least two heroes. And the old game had 20 or so total.
Right.
So.
And with the cards, they also have a, I don't know if it's going to be a separate deck when they sell it or if it's part of the expansion or part of the card pack that you can buy. But they do take a lot of the bad guy mini bosses and such, and they give you the cards for playing them like a good guy, too. So that expands
your possible heroes. Right, so you can play the bad guys as heroes. So
I guess in summary, we'd say that this game is pretty high on the fun factor, pretty high on learning curve initially.
I was going to say a medium learning curve, in all honesty. We still keep the book handy, but I think we've got the rules down pat.
Yeah, it's nowhere near as complicated as the original one.
Yeah.
It's nowhere as complicated as, I would say, Descent.
No.
The first version of Descent. And very high on the quality of pretty much all the components,
yes.
I think.
Very, very good quality. I can't say anything bad about the quality of the components.
So that's Super Dungeon Explorer, Forgotten Kings. You should check it out.
The Kobold Toast came over and he said,
"Hey, out of sight!"
He said for a nominal service charge, I could publish a podcast tonight if I was ready, willing, and able to pay him his regular fee. He would drop all the rest of his pressing affairs and devote his attention to me, but I said,
"Okay, brother! Who you driving with that podcast debris?
Who you driving with that podcast debris?
Don't you waste your time on me."
The Kobold Toast got nervous, and he fidgeted around a bit. He reached in the drawer of his editing desk, and he whipped out a recording kit. I thought it was a mixer and a mic with a foam cover, too. But he told me right then, when the screen popped open, there's nothing this box won't do. With the click of audacity and the level of program, too, he said,
"You might not believe this, little fella, but it'll truncate that silence for you, too."
I said,
"Hey, brother! You're jamming with that podcast of me."
"What kind of a kobold are you, anyway?"
"Look here, brother!
Don't you waste your time on me.
Don't waste your time. You can't help me out, so take your editations and your levelations and cram it up your snout.
But I got like 7 hours more,
he said, and held up a thumb drive. Yeah. So I snatched it all away from him, and I showed him how to do it right.
I wrapped some headphones around my head so I looked like I was a pro. I said some humble jumbles then, and told him he was going too slow. I cut his clips and sound bites, and everything else I found. I had that sucker edited, he couldn't even make a sound. I proceeded to take out the ums then, as long as he was hanging around, he said.
The size of the file has just gone up, and the Wi-Fi has just gone down.
Well, is that a real website or is that a hyphenated website? Don't you know? You could get more done with a scripter. So don't you waste your time on me.
Don't waste it. Don't waste your time on me.
So, have you guys been playing any cool games lately? Or any games lately? I'm not just kind of limited to cool games.
Oh, that broadened it quite a bit.
Alright, well, if we're only saying games and not cool games, I've been playing Pathfinder most Wednesdays over at Firefly.
Burn, Paizo. Burn.
Oh, Paizo's stock just dropped 2 points because of Jason.
Behold in my Jason's awesome head. Power. No, just, you know, life with a toddler does not leave a lot of time for rolling the polyhedrals.
Right.
So, one night a week, if I'm lucky, I can make one night a week.
Yeah, and that's where that organized play comes in handy.
Yeah, I know that session's going to go off each week, and I might be able to sit down at a table.
Yep. In fact, anybody in the Columbia area, Wednesday nights, usually starting at either 6 or 7-ish, is a Pathfinder Society organized play game. Usually GM'd by...
some of us.
A couple of the people here at the table. my wife, Ruby, occasionally runs some stuff. Matt Bukowski, who is the Columbia's Venture Lieutenant for Pathfinder Society. Uh-huh. He'll be more than happy to run whatever game you guys want, including but not limited to the Wee Big Island series and
Confirmation. Make sure you hit him up for Confirmation. If you have not actually played it, make sure you hit him up for Confirmation.
Right, and the Overflow Archive.
He's like really good with
one. Which I still have not played.
And actually, I still have not played it either. What about you,
Clay? By the way, John, thank you for running Refuge of Time.
I guess that was probably the most recent game you played.
Other than the once-a-month LARP that I'm a part of, yeah, that was about the only game that I've played recently. For almost a year now, I've been a part of Shadowmoor, which is using the Solar system of LARP. It's I don't even remember what the acronym is for. But the LARP is actually up in Kings Mountain State Park, which is just south of Kings Mountain, North Carolina. And it's once a month. We're on hiatus over the summer because it's just too stinking hot to be in armor and running around in the woods beating people up with foam swords and clubs and stuff. So we'll come back in August with more plots and more monsters to beat up on, make more money. I have found it very enjoyable over the past year. Moved up quite a bit in the hierarchy of a particular faction, but creating interpersonal relationships with characters more so than what's at the tabletop, where you might know somebody, you might actually have some people that'll actually role play their characters and talk, you know, for their characters, whereas most people just say, I use diplomacy, roll dice. In a LARP, there, you know, no. You better come up with what you're going to say. You probably need to come up with it on the fly pretty quick, and you better be ready to defend yourself if you say the wrong thing, whether it be to an NPC or to a PC, because there's a lot of PvP. It's encouraged. Sometimes plot will do things just to make PvP happen, to kill people, just for fun.
Like in Game of Thrones.
We were just all like thinking in real life.
So, I mean, it's been a lot of fun. It's a heck of a workout. It's usually come back about 4 or 5 pounds lighter at the end of the weekend. But it's only a weekend.
It's because of all the tacos.
So, if anybody's interested in that listens to the podcast, hit me up through the podcast, or just look for me, Clayton Harbaugh, on Facebook, and I can tell you more about it. And if you're wanting to come up and try it out, we do have a kind of a special where your first event is free, so you don't have to pay the normal per event fee that helps pay for the venue and all the other stuff that goes on with plot. So
that's cool. Nice way to try it out.
Oh yeah, I mean, the only thing you're going to be paying for in your first event is food and gas to get up there. They even provide weapons. They will sit down with you and help you build your character right there on site. And even within the first three events, you can completely re-spend your character any way you want to try out something different. You can try something. If you just absolutely hate it, you can go something completely different and try that out. And if that doesn't work, you can completely remake it, and you better figure it out by the third one, because then you're kind of stuck without penalty, because you can re-spend basically anywhere, but or at any point in your progression, but it's costing you 10% of your build in that respect. So, and if you do, by the way, get used to up ahead of time the letters FOIP, because you're gonna hear it a lot. You're gonna ask a lot of questions like, how does this work? How does this work? Or what happens with this? And who are they? And someone's gonna say, find out and play. That's my plug for Shadow.
Cool. You've talked about it before, and each time it sounds more and more exciting.
If you like the outdoors, man, it's a lot of fun.
So what about you, Kristen? Have you been playing anything lately?
Well, like Jason, I've been going to Firefly every Wednesday, pretty much.
So nothing, really. Ah, I'm kidding.
So the life of a itinerant grad student. Summer is when I get really busy and have to actually do work. So I haven't had a whole lot of time to do much gaming. Although I did get an itch to look up a 15-year-old PC game, found out that it was almost going to get re-released with updated graphics, and then because nobody could find out who owns the actual rights to this 15-year-old PC game, that's just not going to happen. Because the three companies that maybe own the rights have threatened to sue
if anybody comes out.
Yeah, if anyone goes, hey, we're going to actually, you know, put out this product that people want for nostalgia. So I went and...
Really? They're going to try to remake E.T.?
That's a bit older than 15 years.
Yeah.
Turns out 15 years ago was...
Don't you mean they're going to dig up that old...
Somebody already did.
They don't need to remake it. They can just go and find that landfill. No, so I actually went on Amazon.com and bought a copy of No One Lives Forever, which is a fantastic first-person shooter where you basically play a female spy in a world that's a lot like Austin Powers, only a lot more sexist.
Cool. Hooray for
that.
For that game, not that
But it's a great game, and although it looks really dated.
It almost sounded like you were going to give us the title to an album.
A Bloodhound Gang?
By Bloodhound Gang, yes.
Nah.
But yeah, so that's cool. That's what I do when I have a free hour or so, which is not very often.
Play some old,
play a really old, butt-as-hell-looking first-person shooter.
Well, the The video game that I've been probably playing the most lately has been the remastered HD Final Fantasy X, or X for people who don't understand Roman numerals.
I like Final Fantasy X.
I like it as well. So much that I bought, this is like the second copy of it I have, because I had to get the HD version for PS4. And it comes with X2. And I'm,
really?
And I'm excited about that, because I'm, you know, one of the three people out there who likes X2.
I still own it.
Well,
on PS2.
A lot of people own it. Yeah. A lot of people don't like it.
I actually didn't beat that one. I beat X long time ago, before I was married. I had a girlfriend that would come over and say, "You're playing the game.
Play this movie for me."
It was basically just playing a movie, and she wanted to know what was the next thing that was going on in the plot. So
if you like.
I had to go through hours upon hours of combat so that she could find out what's actually going to happen to this person.
See, and if you like video games that are movies, X2 is right up there, too.
Even more well. So, yeah.
Now they have YouTube channels for that.
Yeah, well, whatever. You don't get to ride a chocobo.
So one great thing about E3 is you get tons and tons of pre-rendered trailers that show you absolutely zero actual gameplay.
That's true.
Anything about the actual game, except for these are things that might be in it.
I don't know. I mean, they could slap Final Fantasy VII onto like a video of a dog running around in a circle, and I'd probably be like all over that.
I was listening to another podcast and heard that they pointed out that Final Fantasy VII was 1997, mm-hmm. and 2017, not that far away, so I think you probably got at least a good year and a half.
Also, all the cats that were owned by the development team are now dead.
Oh, I remember that was in the because that was in the credits, wasn't it? Something about the cats, or I don't know.
Well, I mean, just in general, if you're going back 20 years, all the cats that were alive. I think.
Okay.
Which means
this fun fact.
No, I'm sad.
This fun fact was brought to you by.
Got in the feels, bro.
Got to remind everyone that cats have a really short lifespan. So all those early internet-adopted cats, all the memes from early on, yeah, those cats did.
You'll never look at that I Can Ann's Cheeseburger cat the same way now.
Yeah,
because you look at that and go, that cat's dead.
That cat died like 5 years ago.
If only he had gotten that cheeseburger. The poor cat.
Start.
Right, well, I can also chip in that as far as console games go, I've been playing The Witcher 3. And
I saw that. Yeah.
That's been very, very good. I've been pretty impressed with that.
Well, did you play Witcher 2?
I played Witcher 2.
Did you like it?
I liked it, but I got up to a point where it felt like a boss fight was just mechanically longer than I wanted to put into it. So okay. I put it down and never wound up picking it back up.
Well, because Ruby just recently got Witcher 1 and Witcher 2. She loved Witcher 1, hated Witcher 2. All I remember is every time looking over while she was playing Witcher 2, and it's like, it looked like there were two dudes wearing their like underwear, like boxing each other. That's all I ever saw every time I looked over.
I can imagine that gets a bit repetitive.
I was like, what the heck is this? Yeah, the Witcher series, not recommended for small people, kids.
Oh, I was about to say, What does the series have against...
What doesn't it have? What doesn't it have against people like that? No, seriously, if you're dwarfs, just check it out.
I was actually fairly amused.
That's
why
they call it Witcher.
I was doing a quest in the game last night.
Sandwich.
And,
Sandwicher.
But in this quest...
Is that sequel to Burger Time?
Sneaking.
I should redo Burger Time. Oh my god. Okay, sorry.
Just in this quest, it was funny because at one point... This particular quest, I felt like I was the extra, not the main character. Because I'm trying to investigate this monster attack, and then I find someone else fighting it that the character knows. And they're like, oh, okay, well, I'll help you fight this. And then you meet him somewhere else, and suddenly he goes and starts attacking the guy that's supposed to be paying you. And it's like, no, just trust me on this. And I'm like, just like a main character would say to a side character.
So it's Big Trouble in Little China, the game.
Not only for that one awesome. Quest, though.
That would actually be a fun game, or at least in theory.
It would until you realize you're not playing the main character. Jack Burton, not the main character of that movie.
Chung, or Wang.
Yeah.
Yeah,
one of those.
So if I've learned anything from...
Butts.
If I've learned anything from the Jurassic series, the Jurassic Universal series, Jurassic Universe movies...
Don't put talking raptors in your movie.
If there's anything else I've learned from those movies, it's never trust science. They'll always lead you astray and create horrible dinosaurs that will eat you. You're all looking for ways to refute that, and you can't, because you saw those movies, too.
No, it was just, that's kind of just Michael Crichton's bag.
He loves science. Like, he loves science. That's why he picks on it all the time. So, are there any RPGs that you've heard about that you, if you had to pick an RPG that you've heard about that you really, really want to play, and you haven't gotten a chance to play it, what would be your number one pick? Rapid fire style. Jason.
I was trying to, God, what was that one that we got off Kickstarter about the shape changing Japanese
Golden Sky Stories? Yeah. Yes, Golden Sky Stories.
I probably wouldn't mind playing that one.
Okay,
that'd be something a little different than Murder Hobos.
That's probably the complete opposite of Murder Hobos. That game. What about you, Clay?
I have not been keeping up with the gaming world on stuff that's new or coming out.
So then that doesn't necessarily be something brand new.
Yeah, Golden Sky Stories, a couple years old now.
You could be like AD&D, second edition.
Sure, we'll go with that one.
He's just saying that because I said it.
No, because then all of a sudden you brought up memories of what character can Randy screw over in a game that I'm playing
in... So I just got terrible memories of Thaco.
Oh. What about you, Kristen?
There's a RPG based on a book series that I like that I want to get a chance to play one day. It's the Mistborn RPG.
Oh, cool.
You play as people who eat metal and get magic powers from it. You think they just get like heavy metal poisoning.
Cool.
They don't. Yeah.
You play as Matter Eater?
I now change it to Oh Cool with a question mark.
the author just likes coming up with interesting magic systems, so each metal does a different thing.
Okay.
So some of them let you push against other metals, some of them let you pull the metal towards you, some of them let you speed up time, some of them let you slow it down.
Huh.
So
go out there, kids. Start eating metal today. You too will develop superpowers.
Nothing bad ever happened from people who ate lead.
That's true. Lead is the most powerful of all the... Most powerful and tasty of all the metals. Right next to mercury. Sweetest of all transition metals. Okay.
And this is the part where John tells us we're all wrong and what we should be wanting to play.
You're all wrong! What you should be playing is Ultimum by Christian Muckler.
To be fair, it was a fun game.
Actually, I am looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing how the rules are going to ultimately end up becoming.
I would like to see an explicit shout-out to beginning combats via bear shitting in caves.
Yes, I haven't given him that feedback yet, but yeah.
It's coming now.
That's going to be a thing. Combat always initiates when a bear takes a poop in your house, and or cave, or near you.
Yeah, it just seems kind of inevitable at that point.
Yes, it does.
I guess it's my turn to go...
Ultimate, it's a really, fun game. I did an interview with Christian Muckler on a podcast several months back. I think we were at GnomeCon when I ran into him. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. And I'm looking forward to this game, Knights Black Agents, because I admit, trying out the quick start, I was like, well, now I'm intrigued. I want to learn more.
It was also fun. Yeah.
But more importantly, I would like to get and run possibly the Dracula dossier.
Which also sounds really cool. Which sounds awesome. Cool.
Which is part of Knights Black Agents. Well, cool. We've talked for quite a bit. I'm sure there's plenty of stuff in here that I can have fun editing through. I'm not sure exactly what we'll call this episode, but hey, that's half the fun of it, right?
Well, maybe a quarter.
Maybe a quarter of it. so cool. Thank you guys for coming over to record. This episode is brought to us by...
coffee beer.
Palmetto Espresso Porter brewed with coffee. No, I'm kidding. It's not really brought by them.
If only.
It's kind of the opposite. Kristen brought them over.
Which is the reason why he's currently in the front running of the Who Can Bring
Clay
a drink
contest. Oh! Ooh! That's a good way to get disqualified, dude. I brought you this drink. I drank half of it.
No backwash.
Well, hey, my understanding was I had to bring him a drink. He didn't have to drink it.
No, there is other stipulations, and unfortunately that one doesn't meet it.
Aww.
So what are the rules to the contest? Send us what you think the rules of the contest should be. At.
Send us a write-up. Listen to the previous podcast and figure out what we said the rules of that particular contest were. And please email them to us, because we don't remember.
Yep. The winner will get an autographed copy of the last podcast.
Oh, this is getting out of control. Where is it? Okay, Frank's gone to the bathroom or something. Good. Let's see if I can get this cake in the croak finished. Looks like Knight's Black Agents or something like that. All right.
Plastic people.
No, no.
Oh, oh, no.
Come on, come on.
We gotta go.
All right, we're back. Just like a ninja, we're gonna kick it in the quick. That seemed like an appropriate intro to that one.
Ouch.
So, on today's Kick in the Quick, we're going to be talking about Knight's Black Agent, the Harker Intrusion, which was the free RPG Day quick start from Pilgrim Press. Joining me today are two of the people who played in the game. I have to my left, I have Kristen. Hello, Kristen.
Hi.
You may remember him from such shows as... The
Cosmic Patrol.
Cosmic Patrol and...
The Valiant.
The Valiant one. The Harbinger Wars.
Yes.
Part whatever. And to my right is Jason. Hey, Jason.
How you doing?
You may remember him from, did you do any of the quick starts with us? Were you also there for the Harbinger Wars?
I was there for Harbinger. I was there for...
You were there for Cosmic Patrol as well.
I was there for Iron Kingdoms.
Yes, Iron Kingdoms. Our very first Kick in the Quick.
Yep. But yeah, so I have been there for many of the Kick in the Quick and was very excited to be part of this one.
All right, so let's... run down our review of this quick start. So like I said, the game is called Knight's Black Agents by Pelgrane Press. It is based off the Gumshoe system, which was written by
Robin D. Laws.
Knight's Black Agents, though, is actually written by Kenneth Haidt. So all kinds of craziness going on there. The basic gist of the game is you are all people who were once spies. Pretty much, you're burnt spies, burnt agents of stuff for different organizations. And the way you became burnt is because you found out the horrible, horrible secret, which is that vampires are pulling the strings for all of these different organizations and such. But you can't just go out and tell anybody because people will think you're crazy. So you've banded together with like-minded-ish sort of other agents, and you're all working to try to uncover the deep, dark, blood-sucking conspiracy.
I guess a bunch of other burn spies would be like-minded, yeah.
Well, I meant more so in the sense that you all kind of know that the vampire thing is legit.
Well, let's admit it. A bunch of burn spies, their day job's pretty much shot.
I just imagine there's like Steve who's like, yeah, the vampires don't exist. I got burned because I was like blowing expense accounts all over the place. You guys think they're vampires.
Yeah, I mean, I would have had my job if it weren't for all those vampires. Yeah, that's it. Anyways, except in this game, vampires really are a thing. So, I GM'd this game. So, let's see. So, how easy was this game to learn and how much prep time did it take? Well, in this particular quick start, there's maybe about 2 pages of actual rules, and it turns out the Gumshoe rules pretty easy to figure out.
Lots of rolling of D6s.
Yes, many rolling of D6s, not a lot of dice to figure out.
Yep, and a lot of your skills, if you have a rank in it, that means you've been trained in it, so you can just do it. So a lot of the clue-finding aspect of that is more governed by, you know, like you might be like, well, I know a lot about archaeology, I have a point in it, so I just know where the best point in this building is to stand to set up my sniper's nest. And you could spend points from those pools to do all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, you might be like, I know the best place in there. I'm going to spend a point. Maybe I can get a little bonus to whatever shot I'm setting up. And the GM will go, sure, that sounds like a reasonable explanation. Why not? And the only time you're really actually rolling the D6 is for a lot of those more active kind of things. Like, oh, I'm going to punch this dude in the face. I need to drive my car really fast. I need to apply first aid to this person. Although that wasn't really a role thing. That was more of a, I'm going to spend some points.
Yeah.
To first so aid the snot out of this guy.
If you might see it in a Michael Bay movie, you're going to be rolling a die. Otherwise...
Michael Bay.
Wow. Not. Let's not
any of the
deter people from playing. No, I got you.
There are much fewer explosions than you would think from that statement right there.
But this thing is—it's set up to be a not so much an investigative, but a thriller. So it's supposed to play out kind of like those awesome spy thriller games, like the Bourne Identity or the Bourne Supremacy or Bourne Again or whatever they're called. I'm just kidding. There's no.
Are totally gonna
Bourne Again should be the next one. That's what I would call it. Bourne to
kill. Electric Boogaloo. Yeah.
Bourne to dance.
I will say that having run Call of Cthulhu a few times, I do like the idea that the players will always get a clue to progress things. You don't ever find a situation where, oh, geez, everyone blew that spot hidden.
I guess we're stuck in this room.
Okay, guys, I need to go to the bathroom for a second and figure out how the heck I'm going to get you to point B.
I guess we'll just live in this warehouse from now on. All right, so let's talk about a little bit about the adventure itself. We're not going to really spoil anything. I will say, about as far as the adventure, though, this is the prelude to a series of adventures that's coming out in August, according to the Kickstart campaign, called the Dracula Dossier. This is the prelude to that, which explains how the agents ended up with the...
titular?
Yes. The titular dossier about Dracula. Hey, imagine that. Because what's a vampire game without Dracula? Vampire the Masquerade, pretty much.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're not talking about
still
that.
Still better a love story than Twilight.
So without giving away too much about the adventure, what do you guys think of it? And do you feel like it gave a good idea, a good feeling for the overall setting of the game itself?
Well, there's some globetrotting. So you started off in one location... it was Marrakesh?
Right? Yep.
Something like that. And you
yeah, end up, you guys were all over the place.
Yeah, right? Ended up going to Gibraltar and London, and then where you'd expect to end up in a game that preludes an adventure called the Dracula Dossier, you end up in Romania.
Ah, yes, Romania.
So globetrotting, just like you would in a spy movie.
The only thing that kind of made it better... is if it like gave certain dates, like you end up in Romania, and oh, it just happens to be Walpurgis Noct. That just would have been the icing on the cake.
But like was said, you know, globetrotting, you know, any good spy movie or spy, you know, any sort of good thriller, you're going to be going from one place to another. So I mean, the setting was really good, but also for this in particular, the characters were well designed for that. But speaking more to the game, like the skills available. So you had skills like Bullshit Detector to let you know if someone's lying to you.
Yes, which I had a couple ranks in.
They had really neat names for some of these things, like Preparedness, which covers like how prepared your character is. Imagine that.
Traffic analysis. Not what you think it is. It's not what they do in morning radio.
It's like electronic traffic, like... emails and pattern recognition. I guess would be a better way to kind of.
I got that. I just didn't have a use for it.
Well,
I could have probably figured out a use for it. I just didn't.
And let's not underrate cop talk.
Yeah, cop talk was pretty cool. That came in handy.
We talked to all the cops.
I remember the question came. Well, what's the difference between flattery and flirting? It was like, well,
depends on which way the person you're talking to swings.
But it was neat because you didn't have any gear or anything like that on your sheet, but you had these spaces for it because you would spend points for certain things to go, oh, I want this piece
of
gear.
Not just empty spaces for gear, empty spaces for contacts, and for languages that you know.
Right, and for any for if you had any covers, like, oh, well, in Romania, I'm known as Count Wampirio.
The King of Plaid.
The King of Plaid.
Alucard.
Dr. Acula. So anyway, it's funny, I've just been re-listening to the HP Podcraft covering Dracula just today, as a matter of fact.
In preparation.
So that's still, yeah, sure. That's fresh in my mind. Kenneth Haidt was on there, and he was talking about this quite a bit.
I think it's kind of neat, though, you get around the idea of, oh, well, nobody in the group speaks this language.
Now, what was that skill that kept coming up over and over again and no one had? It was archaeology?
Archaeology. Right.
So that's something we can say that kind of did not really work in this particular quick start. Was the pre-gen characters, in the game, it kept saying, oh, okay, if anybody's got archaeology, it comes up with this.
We were using all six of the pre-gens, right?
Yes, we were using all of the pre-gens. None of the pregens had archaeology, and they made that a skill that at least twice had some clues in it. I fudged on at least one of those because I was like, there's no way I'm not going to just leave you guys hanging on this. Ooh, excuse me.
Now, I imagine you could play the scenario with your home-built characters.
I would imagine
so. Some of which might have had archaeology.
Right, so that could make a difference, a big difference right there.
But for a quick start, demanding archaeology and what sounds like two places and not giving any pregens who have it.
But in fairness, it was extra information, but it did not really hinder you from getting any core clues. I wanted to make sure you guys got it because I thought it threw in some interesting flavor into the thing. We talked about the adventure, and the pregens all had really interesting backgrounds. I think, Jason, you are playing the accountant.
Yeah, well, the bagman. I didn't realize what bagman meant, but I found that once I started playing him like Cyril from Archer, I had a lot more success. Suppressing fire!
Extinguisher.
All right, so did you enjoy the quick start, and would this make you want to check out the full game? Kristen?
I'm just going to say I was a little biased ahead of time, because I've been listening to the Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff podcast for a while now, and the Knights Black Agents comes up quite a bit there, and it just, well, Kenneth Haidt knows how to sell his game.
So, yes, he does.
So, I mean, mentioning it continuously helps, I think, but yeah, it sounded really cool, and I've been wanting to get into it. If only I'd had the opportunity to buy a hardcover copy of it.
But sadly our game store had one copy that soon disappeared.
So sad. Yeah, it just by itself was enough to make me want to pursue the game more. So that's a lot of the cool stuff that you can do in this thing.
And this one leaves you off in an interesting place. This man died to give us this thing, and it's
about Dracula.
Copy of Dracula with all sorts of notes and stuff in there? What?
So you get to read Dracula and annotations.
So I think as the GM, I would just like plop down a copy of Dracula and say, alright guys, before next time, you get to read this. No, I would.
Assigned reading.
I wouldn't do that. I may have put notes in the margins. That'd be an awesome prop, though.
There will be a test.
There will be a test. Well, I watched League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I think I'm good to go. Don't do that.
I would also say the popular culture that's risen up about Dracula over the last century, not entirely accurate. Right. Vampires don't spark.
That's true. Jason, what about you? Did you enjoy this game, and would it make you want to check out the full game?
I enjoyed it immensely, but like Kristen, I was also already a little bit biased towards it. I really wanted to play something in the Gumshoe engine since I'd heard about Trail of Cthulhu.
Okay.
The notion of, okay, well, all of your, based on your skills, all of your characters, someone's going to get certain clues out of each scene. So there'll always be some way to progress as long as you design the adventure well.
Right.
And the setting, I had listened to another actual play, I don't remember where, of a session of Knights Black Agents. So the notion of spies versus vampires, but not done in a campy way, done in a deadly serious way where these things are...
Yeah, whenever we encountered something supernatural, it was either serious hints of get the hell out of there, or when they actually came into physical contact with us, someone fell very quickly.
Yep.
Very true. Ouch!
Yeah, being double tomfed on the head.
Straight out. But,
didn't I rip out, like, a vampire ripped out one character's throat?
I think it was Mitch.
Mitch, yeah. Right at the end of the game. That's where it should happen, too. Awesome way to go out on that one. It was explosions and fires and dead vampires.
We had no problem intimidating the crap out of all of the regular humans we encountered. Because, I mean, you play as super badass spies, but when you run into things that are supernatural, it's like, yeah, you're in a different league.
Yep.
And
that's part of the charm of this game, I guess.
Yeah. So you get these people that they're capable, they're confident, and they're used to doing very bad things to people. But then they come up against something that's that taken several levels above, and what are you going to do then? Mostly it seems like run away.
And six spies in one car driving through the streets, fog-strewn streets of London, with at least, what was it, three or four of us shooting out the back? I want to see that.
Yeah. So that's something we didn't really talk about. There is an interesting mechanic in this game, which is the chase mechanic, which seems to be a very integral part to this game, because it came up a couple times. And there's potential for it to come up at least two more times in this thing.
Think of how often it happens in spy movies.
So right. It's, see, so, it's just so I felt like they came up with a pretty good, pretty decent chase mechanic in this, in my opinion, where it's not just, all right, well, you're driving, so we all got to go on your initiative.
But I think a lot of the mechanics were actually pretty streamlined and very well done. But yeah, the chase mechanic was, it was abstracted well enough, but, you know, just also just right there on the table so you could see what was going on.
Right. I was kind of like you guys. I had heard so much about this that I was already giddy with anticipation when I saw that this was coming out for Free RPG Day and jumped right on the chance to volunteer to run it. And after running it, I do want to run Knights Black Agents, but in particular, I want to run the Black Dossier. No, they should never be run. The Dracula Dossier, because that sounds like it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for helping me with this kick in the quick for Knights Black Agents, the Harker Intrusion, Free RPG Day game for 2015 by Pellegrine Press. If you get a hold of it, it's also packaged with a quick start for 13th Age, called At Land's Edge. 13th Age is a fantasy game that I don't really have any information about.
But except it looks, for that book you're
but watching. It looks like it's a lot of fun. Well, I didn't read that part of the book. I just read that part of the book. So go on, check it out. Actually, one little quick thing we'll kind of end off with. If you had to put your own sort of, if you were going to reskin Knights Black Agents, what sort of skin would you put on it? Now, Jason, you had mentioned one.
Oh, it would completely destroy the tone, but I'd love to see the characters in Archer in this.
Okay. Because
you've got a spy agency there, at least in name, and be kind of funny to see them in this situation.
See them going against vampires.
Well, from what we did have shoved in our face about the actual rulebook, they set that up. You can play the super suave spy who's got a license to kill, or the spy with his memory erased mysteriously.
Right.
Like, they built it in that you can skin it those ways. And yeah, the tone is fairly serious and dark, but when they start throwing James Bond around, that, I mean, there was the definite string of campy periods of James Bond.
I think a couple interesting ways to skin it would have been either Burn Notice, in which case everybody would want to play Sam Axe, because who wouldn't want to play Sam Axe? Or, damn it, I was just thinking about it. Saved by the Bell. No, I'm kidding.
on the Burn Notice.
That would be awesome.
I call Screech.
On the Burn
Notice. Jay Slag, what are we going to do?
But on the Burn Notice note, I do think it was cool how that one character ability you had to describe
was
when
that,
you're a spy.
When you're a spy.
You had to give this when you're a spy description about how you're jury rigging this equipment together to improvise something.
Here's what I thought of. And it would probably take some of the agent part out of this, but maybe Supernatural.
There was some of that.
The 11th the 11th season hit off of CW. 11 seasons, can you imagine? Anyway, you'd have to throw an Impala skill in there somewhere.
Is that a skill?
That would be one of those descriptives you use to.
This is definitely not something you could easily reskin as a Buffy, though. There's an investigative arc, but you don't come anywhere close to their power level.
Although if you want to play a good Buffy game, you should really play
the Buffy RPG.
Monster Hearts. Or the Buffy RPG, I guess, if you really want to.
Because you know there's one. Yeah.
But Monster Hearts, I think, would work really well for Buffy.
That's a game I would like to play. And if I could get my legs under me and get a little confidence in game mastering on the fly, I think would be a lot of fun to run.
Okay. Well, this is a challenge put out to those guys. Come up with a quick start one, and Jason will run it for us, and we'll tell you how many cabooses it gets. There's a pun in there somewhere related to that game, I'm sure. All right, cool.
Caboose.
Thanks, guys.
Good. I'm done. Finished. Time to upload and post this sucker.
Toast arrogantly clicked away at the upload button, knowing full well that within minutes all his work would be spread out across the planet like fresh icing on a tasty muffin.
What? What are you talking about?
Seems like just the place for me to stop narrating and break into a long jazz-inspired guitar solo.
No.
Are you ready?
No.
Here we go.
No. No.
that's it. That's the end of this episode of the Scarab Swarmcast. If you liked this, or even if you didn't, feel free to send us an email at swarmcast@scarab.com. That's S-C-A-R-L-B. Lots of little dashes in there. Or you can leave us a message on Facebook. Yeah, Facebook. If you want us to read any of your comments on the show, let us know. Hey, subscribe to our show. Check out the show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Or you can grab that RSS feed from our website. You can get our website off of Facebook or off of Scarab's website. Yeah, it's all a bunch of internet libbity-jibbity. So, until next time, when you think of Scarab's Wormcast, think of this podcast. And when you think of Toast, think of me! So hey, if you like this episode and you like some of the music, you should check out the work of Frank Zappa. Go ahead, check it out. Look him up on the internet. Ask your folks about it. I'm sure they'll really...
Such a crazy game. I've heard a rumor from Podcast Control.
Oh no, don't say that's true.
They got a message for the Cobalt Dude.
I'm happy, hope you're happy too.
I've played enough needed his games, game conventions following. The shrieking of kobolds being killed by war. Just pictures of bears holding sharks. And I ain't got no minis, and I ain't got no dice. But I'm hoping to kickstart the newest thing going.
Gods to prods, funk to funky.
The show could be won by a monkey.
Yelling into the mic, calling it a great show. Time and again I tell myself I'll edit the thing tonight. The little wavy lines are bugging me.
Oh no, not again.
I'm editing a stuttering friend.
I'm happy, hope you're happy too.
One slash of a but no buzzing cell phone.
I recorded good things.
I recorded bad things.
I never cut anything out of reviews.
Want an axe to hack out dead air. Wanna be done right now.
Props to prods, funk to funky.
The show could be won by a monkey.
Yelling into a mic.
Calling it a great show.